From the guy who's read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know, this is a Guy's Take episode. What is up, crew? Welcome back to the Crypto Economy Podcast. I have had a bit of a time trying to figure out what the heck I wanted to cover today, because there is so much stuff going on. Everybody's talking about Libra, and I'm like, so do I want to talk about Libra? Do I want to dig into the white paper? And I didn't really start tackling, like, even looking into it really until this morning. I mean, it's just announced, so or at least their white paper is. When did this drop? It may very well have been this. I don't know when this actually hit. I feel like this is within a day. This all feels incredibly fresh, and everybody's talking about it like it happened today. I can't find any specific thing that says today is when this dropped, but it could have been just yesterday that all this happened. I have been away from the whole thing. Sorry about the very long weekend and no episodes, either Friday or Monday. I usually am. Mondays are kind of the big listen days for everybody, so I always try to get out one on Monday. But yesterday was actually my wife's official birthday. So happy birthday, Brianna. And we had a fun, very, very busy, but very, very fun weekend. So we are getting back into this. And believe it or not, after I was actually starting with the one I had planned on reading was one by Dan Held. Good article, a really good article, actually, by, called Quantum Narratives. I don't know now if I'm going to read it at all, because I kind of felt stupid after I started, as soon as I started digging into it. Somehow I did not catch when I read this before that, I mean, he's got a link to it. When he's got a link to Dan Held, if you've ever read his stuff, he tries to put like a song with it or something, so that you can listen to it. Sometimes I'll like actually play that like while I try to read it. But he actually did an audiobook version of this article of Quantum Narratives, which you can get on SoundCloud and YouTube. So I kind of felt like really redundant to do it on the show. I might still do it if, you know what? Actually, let me just ask you guys if anybody still wants me to do Quantum Narratives on the show. I would love to do it, but he's got it available that he read aloud on YouTube and SoundCloud. It's about a 12-minute article. At least his read of it is 12 minutes. So you can either listen to that one, or if you'd like me to read it on the show, all right, I will. It's a good article. It could very well do with two audio versions, but I didn't want to, you know, stepping on his toes for no reason. So with that, let's talk about Libra. So the first thing I did, I was like, all right, let's see what happens. I'm right now installing the dependencies. I just cloned it from GitHub, and I am going to run this thing up and get on testnet. I'm going to try. I saw that there were a couple of people joking about, who is this? Is it Wong Jun Ian? Oh, no, he's looking for testnet. Somebody was bragging about being a Libra millionaire up here on Twitter, which was cracking me up. I am going to, a bunch of people's like, oh, got some sample code to withdraw from sender. I don't know. I'm trying to play around with it, but I apparently had a lot of dependencies to deal with. So that's all still installing. I haven't gotten to experiment quite yet. But there's a really great article. Again, this is just released, so I definitely don't want to... Wait, June 18th? No, that is today. I'm an idiot. June 18th. Jameson Lopp dropped this morning it says 12 minutes by Medium, but he's just hitting a lot of the main points. I already went all the way through this. And I obviously don't want to read this one because this is brand new. I don't want to take away from, he's already got like a huge, it's like 3,100 claps on this article all about Libra. My overview thoughts, just kind of in general, before we start digging into some of this stuff, I'm going to read a thread by Caitlin Long that I think is really good. I might grab a couple of sections from Lop's article. First, this is not a blockchain. And that's what I kind of find most funny about this whole thing is that they keep calling it a blockchain like that's the marketing ploy, but it's not. It's not at all. Like from the idea of blockchain, like as a blockchain is a specific thing. It's not just like if your money is held or your coins, quote unquote, are held by a, cryptographic key or a public private key that, oh, it becomes a blockchain. Like, no, like a blockchain is a specific thing, and this is not a blockchain, even though they consistently call it that, which I just thought is funny. I don't know if that's just like the marketing term that they think that's going to get the most interest, but yeah, it's not. So, we will start out. First, I wanted to hit something by Andreas. He had a really good tweet that says, and I think this is a really good way of putting it, is that there's the five stages of grief for traditional financial services. And because they are going the way of the dinosaur. Like this is a huge step, I think. As much as I think Facebook Coin is a joke, in the grand scheme of things, that's even hard to say because I think the service could very well be massively used. Like, I think this will actually be a really popular thing because of the reach and the network of Facebook. I think it could be successful because there are plenty of people who have Facebook accounts who do not have good banking, and traditional banking is going extinct. Like financial services, fintech is obviously the future. There's just a huge difference between independent stored value and just, some other company's token or stablecoin. That's essentially what this is. It's a stablecoin that is supposedly going to be accessible to a broader network of people than what traditional finance is available to. But that, as Andreas says, this is the bargaining stage. And that's a really good way to put this. This is when, like, everybody can see the writing on the wall here. And people are trying to pivot. The industry is trying to pivot to where they know the consumers are moving. There's going to become a point where people are demanding control over their funds. People, in fact, they are. They are right now. People do not want to wait business days for their money to be available. People do not want to have to ask permission to do something with their money. They want an app. They want it right in front of them. They want, as soon as they say, send it to this person for this person to have it. Like, all of these things are critical, like moving forward into the future. People want more. They want an incredibly simple user experience, and they want to feel that it is theirs. That what they, and I think that's actually being lost too. There's a huge, that's why I think privacy is coming back in a big way, or will come back in a big way, which we talked about in the last Bitcoin meetup, the crypto chat with the Raleigh Bitcoin crew. Man, this thing has taken forever. I have so many dependencies to install here. The fact that this is all Facebook like software, I don't care how many people they're collaborating with. It kind of scares me that I'm installing all of this. But luckily, I'm planning on wiping this computer and installing a new OS on it anyway. So, maybe I don't have much to worry about it, but I feel like I'm just installing a backdoor into my computer right now. But so I will take this risk for you guys so I can play around with this and tell you about it. So Andreas says, in order to bargain, the financial industry made a deal with the devil and got a fake blockchain in return. This whole thing is kind of comedic to me, because it seems kind of desperate, and there's so many things in this. Here's a, you know what, let me just go ahead and hit Caitlin's, let me hit Caitlin's thread first. We'll just start there. So, Caitlin Long, I imagine anybody who's been in Bitcoin for a while knows and or has heard of Caitlin Long. She is responsible for a lot of the new securities laws and like very pro blockchain, pro cryptocurrency, legal environment in Wyoming. And she's done a lot of work in that regard. So she's definitely one to keep an eye on because I know she's, well, she's just always doing stuff. She's making things move. So it's important to keep an eye on or an ear out for what she's up to because she's always got some interesting stuff to report, particularly on the legal front, because she is definitely heading off a lot of stuff happening over there. Let's go ahead and hit her tweet storm really fast, or her tweet thread. First analysis of Facebook's Libra. Facebook completely misunderstands money. Facebook understands payment systems, but that's not the same as money. Two telling quotes. First, quote, Libra is backed by a reserve of real assets. And quote, many cryptocurrencies today, for example, Bitcoin and Ether, have no underlying assets to back them, end quote. Now, this next line of hers is really, really good. So I wanted to interject here just to make sure you're paying attention. This is what she says. Money is a good that serves as an honest ledger. It does not need to have intrinsic value because it attains value by people trusting it to be an honest ledger. Money is just a bookkeeping system. Not all bookkeeping systems are money. Yet Facebook throws gobbledygook at us by asserting Libra has value because it's backed by bank deposits and short-term government securities. Well, at least it appears Facebook doesn't have plans yet to engage in fractional reserve banking with Libra reserves assets. But this point about money is critical to understand. Money is an honest ledger that individuals use to keep track of real wealth, defined as productive assets. Sorry, Facebook, but real wealth doesn't include, quote, bank deposits and short-term government securities. That said, thank you, Facebook, for widening the conversation about what money really is. That is a true service to society. Libra is the first denationalized money. I'll always use quotations when referring to it as such. Obviously, it was in quotations. That billions of people in the world will encounter. And I salute Facebook for advancing that cause, because billions of people will soon become woke to the unfairness and instability of current monetary and payment systems. People are smart. They will figure out Libra isn't scarce, and they will migrate to Bitcoin and other true crypto over time. At bottom, Libra is a helpful detour that advances the crypto cause for honest money, and nothing made this clearer to me than reading this. All right, so I'm gonna read this excerpt really quick from her tweet thread, but just so you know, because I haven't said this yet, you can find all of this on developers.libra.org. Obviously, not her tweet thread, that's Twitter. But basically, anything you want to know about Libra, or as far as I can tell so far, everything that I am seeking to find on Libra, and there is a lot to dig into. So if you want to do that, definitely go check it out. More than enough to explore there. But we're going to hit, so this is the section titled The Opportunity. Quote, as we embark on this journey together, we think it is important to share our beliefs to align the community and ecosystem we intend to spark around this initiative. Point. We believe that many more people should have access to financial services and to cheap capital. We believe that people have an inherent right to control the fruit of their legal labor. We believe that global, open, instant, and low-cost movement of money will create immense economic opportunity and more commerce across the world. We believe that people will increasingly trust decentralized forms of governance. We believe that a global currency and financial infrastructure should be designed and governed as a public good. And we believe that we all have a responsibility to help advance financial inclusion, support ethical actors, and continuously uphold the integrity of the ecosystem. End quote. So back to the thread. These are the very same goals as true crypto. I don't think Facebook uses the same definitions I do, but we agree on the basics and are headed in the same general direction. I salute that. Now, for some details. Most of what I predicted here last week still holds. And she links a Forbes article, What Facebook's Cryptocurrency Means, Six Predictions. I have not read that yet, but I will, let me go ahead and save this so I don't forget. I will link to this in the show notes. So if you want to dig into this and read Caitlin Long's article on Forbes, you can in the show notes. So even though Facebook didn't announce Libra will pay interest to users, I stand by my out-on-a-limb prediction that it will be forced to do exactly that. Not only should everyone be screaming about Facebook now getting the same corporate welfare as banks, but I thought of another wrinkle on that point this morning. The developing world will be screaming about a developed world company profiting off developing world savers in such a manner by hoarding all the interest income. I just don't think that will fly for very long. It will become a political hot potato, and maybe also a geopolitical one too. But again, thanks Facebook for opening that whole conversation about what is interest, who earns it, and why. Billions of people are about to become woke on that topic too. Another key point, Facebook didn't lay out its regulatory strategy. Is Libra a security? Does Facebook need money transmission licenses, etc.? But I think the crypto industry just gained a powerful new ally in our quest to fix outdated laws that stand in the way of progress. All that said, in the meantime, there's one U.S. regulatory structure that almost certainly works very well for Libra, Wyoming's new Special Purpose Depository Institution License, which is almost tailor-made for projects like this. Seriously, Facebook, you should look at that because it obviates the need for money transmitter licenses in many U.S. states. You'd be welcome in Wyoming. I do worry a lot, though, about how you would interface with governments. Wyoming wouldn't tax you or make you share customer data, but I do worry about other governments viewing Libra as a giant data honeypot for government surveillance and tax reporting purposes. Will you encrypt customer spending history so you can't see it or report it to governments? You didn't answer that in the white paper, which makes me fear the answer, but I'm willing to keep an open mind. I'll stop here for now, but if you'd like more analysis, here are podcasts where I discuss Facebook's Libra in chronological order taped, What Bitcoin Did, Thinking Crypto, and ABC News. So if you want to check those out, those links are in that last thread of hers, or last tweet of hers. And there's a number of different points here that I think are really cool just in the whole impact of what this thing is. First, I really love this. I'm going to read this again just because I really like this. Money is a good that serves as an honest ledger. A good that serves as an honest ledger. It doesn't need to have intrinsic value because it attains value by people trusting it to be an honest ledger. Money is just a bookkeeping system, but not all bookkeeping systems are money. This is a well said point. And when you begin to see that money is in fact an honest ledger, like that's what gold is. That's what metals, like untarnishable metals, that's how they served their purpose, is they had all of these attributes to work as a unit for a ledger that you knew the unit was honest. That's what makes it good money, is the fact that its characteristics establish honesty and independent honesty, honesty that can't be tricked by some centralized institution or some, God of the universe that can say, oh, these characteristics apply to everyone but this select group of people. The honesty is built into the physical nature of the unit being used. And in the case of most of human history, gold was the most honest ledger. And I don't care how many times Peter Schiff says it or how ignorant he is of this fact, money has no value, or money's immense value has nothing to do with the fact that it's got some utility or that you can use it in electronics. We have plenty of things that we can use in electronics. Gold could disappear, and it really would not affect anything to speak of. It is the best at producing an honest ledger because it is the most secure, least inflationary, most sound money. Gold is immensely valuable because it is a good money. No questions asked. It's almost unbelievable that he doesn't see that even if there is any other utility, some other tiny market that it is, that 98% of its value, some enormous percentage, I just pulled that out of my ass, but the enormous premium on the gold price is because it's money. It's because, I mean, literally what we have done, and I'm going to read a piece on this as soon as I get permission. I really love this piece, and I just stumbled back across it and read it again by Milton Friedman from 1991 about rhinestones, and I thought it was a perfect example. And we're going to cover it on the show, so don't miss that one. Don't forget to subscribe to the show so that you don't miss that episode, because it's going to be a fun one. It's not super long, and it's a great piece by Milton Friedman on the rhinestones, and it's a perfect analogy of why gold is literally no different from rhinestones in how we treat it and how we use it. And something that seems so bizarre with rhinestones is such a perfect allegory for gold and for Bitcoin, even more so for Bitcoin for a number of reasons. But again, we'll get into it. I don't want to get ahead of myself and spend the whole Libra episode talking about that. But that was just a really great quote. I gotta hand it to Caitlin Long. Just a wonderful, just so succinct, just hits that point solid. So so you ask, Libra is backed by, and this is a quote, this is from their white paper, backed by bank deposits and short-term government securities. Now, isn't that funny? Because as soon as you think of money, you realize that money is an honest ledger. Then what they are doing is they are creating a centralized ledger and trying to say, they're trying to call it decentralized. They're trying to give the illusion that they're spreading out the security or they're spreading out the corruption of this ledger, but it's backed by bank deposits and short-term government securities, which are unbacked ledgers that are not honest, or are not necessarily honest. In fact, bank deposits by fractional reserve are inherently dishonest. They're dishonest by law, really. And so what's hilarious is that we have a quote-unquote decentralized ledger of a basket of centralized and corrupt ledgers, which those centralized and corrupt ledgers are typically backed by nothing but some authority or promise, like government securities, bonds, bank deposits, etc. So I don't know exactly what Facebook intends to, and I have no idea how on earth. I mean, I guess Facebook is just the one holding all of these, or the one in central, like with the control of these bank deposits. I can't imagine they're going to try to come up with some elaborate way to hold multiple institutions with these, but it's just multiple points of failure rather than one. I guess it would be better if it was all just centrally controlled with Facebook in some terms like that, because I don't know how this thing is actually going to provide any additional security. It could obviously be an incredibly easy to use and, you know, provide essentially a crypto feeling user experience that could be simplified. And, you know, the software and stuff that goes into this could very well be applied to something like the system actually seems oddly reminiscent of Ethereum and also kind of sounds like it's going to have all the problems of Ethereum, which is kind of funny. Let's not get into the technicals yet. In fact, let's hit that after we do our sponsor. But so let's see, what was the other point? Money's an honest ledger. What else does it include? Blah, blah, blah. Yes, this was a really interesting point that she brought up, is that Libra is a denationalized money, quote unquote. It behaves as an asset that's not connected to any single nation. It's supposedly a backing, it's a reserve system for a a centralized note for essentially a bank note where Facebook is the bank. And they're trying to create some sort of state system. Allow connections. Some sort of state system, which they're calling a blockchain, but it is not. In order to, you know, provide some degree of like openness or security to this banknote. It's a digital banknote, obviously. And that's one thing that I've talked about in the past on a number of different episodes, talking about how we're going back to the free banking system, that fintech is moving things, and the idea of blockchains and these cryptocurrency systems are taking us back to these this note bank, this note system, this a system where every bank that you use has their own notes backed by some form of real money or some form of good or asset that maintains its value. And it's asking the question again, which this really is a huge, huge step in the right direction, that people are going to ask, what is money? What does this mean? This is not my country. This is my social network that's giving me a money. And its value is in relation to my country's. Why did its value go up when my country's, the value of my country's money went down, or vice versa? Like, what, it suddenly puts it directly in front of people that they have an asset that is quote unquote money, that is, that's just not the default. It's not what they're used to. And it puts it in front of 2.1 billion people. So it's actually a really exciting development in crypto, in my opinion. I mean, again, I think the project is kind of garbage, and I have no idea whether it will last. I think the only way it could actually maintain, from what I've learned about it today, it sounds like it's only going to work if they try really hard to keep it centralized, but kind of give it the illusion of decentralization, and which is obviously what it is. They're, the nodes that are actually running the system are entirely permissioned, and it looks like what I'm downloading and installing right now on my computer, I cannot believe that these dependencies are still installing, that what I am installing right now is some sort of API access, that I'm just talking to the nodes, and so I get to play with Libra testnet if this ever actually installs on my computer. But and yes, they do have very good goals. I thought it was funny in the second point that I read in the opportunity that she the segment that she pulled out from the white paper says that we believe that people have an inherent right to control the fruit of their legal labor. And that immediately begs the question. I love that they put in the word legal, because that immediately answers A, both whether or not it's decentralized, and B, the fact that there is a, essentially there's a conflict of interest, and there must be, from their perspective, and I don't see how they would ever be able to get around it, that they have to have some sort of backdoor or means of, whether it's a joint control between the signers of the system or whatever it is, that they are going to bend to whatever law. And the question of whether or not the legality of something is ethical or not, as soon as you have an unethical or an evil law that's coming into question, the legality is the only thing that we're worried about, not the ethics of it. And I think that's where Facebook will simply have to, if they're going to be operating in whatever jurisdiction or country that they think they're going to be operating in, they're going to have to bend to whatever the government wants. And that means that they're going to have to bend to the totalitarian social credit system of China, if they intend to use this in China, which means, and again, back to her point of, they don't say anything about encrypting the data so that Facebook cannot access all of this. They cannot data mine all of this information, that this can't be used for surveillance. They clearly have left themselves wide open to letting them see this, acquire this giant data honeypot. And there is nothing quite like Facebook's track record for saying, yes, that's exactly what we're going to do. And yes, we're going to sell it, and we're going to use it to, we're going to sell it to governments and other corporations. And holy crap, we're going to make bukus of money by treating our users like our just nice little guinea pigs and slaves. So this will not be, anybody who thinks that this is if this is going to do anything for privacy, no matter how much they will undoubtedly bang the privacy drum. They will position this as if somebody is getting privacy, and they've already said that this isn't going to be something where they're selling the data, et cetera, et cetera. But they have permissioned nodes that people are going to have to connect to and send transactions to. That data is there. If it is not by default encrypted, if it is not like some system of confidential transactions or coin joining decentralized sent before even being sent to the node, that data is going to be there and somebody's going to sell it. There is no stopping that, and any kind of posturing or virtue signaling that they do on that front should be absolutely 100% ignored until they prove that. I don't even see how they could do that. But until there is some absolute, like, no questions asked proof that there is going to be some sort of privacy in this. But I just don't see that happening. Again, a couple of the points that they make in their goals here clearly say that this is about supporting ethical actors, quote unquote, as they say, legal labor, that the challenging of what is legal and the jurisdiction that this is involved in, that is not what this is for. This will not be about privacy and independence. This will be about doing with it what Facebook thinks you should be able to do with it. And Facebook is going to get data, and they are going to sell it, no matter how much they try to position themselves as some benevolent, benevolent dictator who's just going to take a hands-off approach to this whole thing. That's utter nonsense. It's just not going to happen. So, as Caitlin says, this is a giant data honeypot for government surveillance and tax reporting purposes. So, yeah, that's the only safe assumption to be made there. So we will get into, let's go ahead and hit our sponsor real quick. My Bitcoin blanket fort got really hot really fast today. So, we will come back to this. I want to hit a couple things. One, about why I think Libra is going to be a Ripple killer. And then also dig a little bit into the technicals that I've gathered, mostly from Jameson Lopp's article, which I might read it on the show if I can get permission from him. But I don't want to read it right now because it just came out today. And I don't want to snag his audience. I think there's probably at least a good week or two of people digging into it and wanting to read his article. And I suggest you guys read it if you do actually like want to sit down and read the thing. It's not a very long read, and it's got tons of great stuff in it. We will be hitting some of those points in just a minute, but again, let's hit our sponsor real fast. All right, another quote from Andreas Antonopoulos. It's a tweet from this morning. While Facebook's Libra doesn't compete against any open, public, permissionless, borderless, neutral, censorship-resistant blockchains, it will compete against both retail banks and central banks. This is going to be fun to watch. This is another really interesting point of this, is that this is really competing with retail banking and current payment systems. Because remember, this is a state chain of some sort. It doesn't really make, like, I'm not 100% sure if you should call this a chain, but this is a state blockchain-ish system that where the transactions are built in to the node, the software, the control of the keys. Like, all of this is built into the code. This isn't requiring some other settlement. This is just a centrally controlled backing of other assets, other currencies, and other treasuries, interest-bearing treasuries and stuff. And that's another point that Caitlin brought up, is that they're going to have to push that forward. They're going to have to, because whatever assets they have backing this that's set in, you know, some savings account or some treasury or whatever, Except unless, of course, they're stupid and they put it in some negative interest asset, which wouldn't make any sense, obviously. They're going to be making, like, that's why, that's probably one of the major reasons that they say see a huge potential with this, is that they're going to be getting the interest off of these assets. People are going to be giving them money that they can make interest on, and then they give them this Libra currency that is, you know, just backed by all the assets that other people have transferred to Facebook or this consortium of companies and institutions that are backing this system as signers. And that's what, as far as the it does seem like it's that their goal is to kind of push this out to the third world, because Facebook obviously has a lot of users that do not have, like, where smartphones are available, but there is not any, like, huge traditional banking system. And that's what's funny. If they're banking or seeking to, like, get access to people who do not have traditional banking, I think it's only like, what is it, like 2 billion people, 2.5 billion people, something like that. A shockingly small number of people in the world have access to traditional banking, like, very easily. And this would be a huge game changer in that regard. And even more so, the implications of it being denationalized, like Caitlin said, was that this isn't a state money. This is a very different concept of what it means to be holding a currency on the internet, regardless of the fact that it's still centralized and it's still completely trust-based. So, if they're trying to reach out to that customer base, they're trying to reach out to the third world, then what they're doing, you think about it, they could actually become, this has the potential for them to become one of the biggest, like, quote-unquote, retail banking, like, systems in fintech with their user base that they have access to without actually stealing customers from retail banking. Obviously, it completely soaks up their ability to expand into other markets if, you know, Facebook beats them to it, which I think they said that this was like 6 months away or early next year, early 2020, that this would be released, I believe, is their goal. But this really flies in the face of the retail banking market and the central banking market. Like, if, you know, the IMF or G20, whatever it is, like, they've all, there's been talks about a global, I think the spider has something to do with, like, trying to have a global currency, like, you know, some aggregate bond thing or whatever that's supposed to be a global currency for, you know, the new reserve. This has been a goal of theirs for a very long time. And it's directly related to how much control and influence they have over the governments and economies that participate in this. These international, like, monetary systems is what I'm meaning. And Libra flies in the face of this for the user base that Facebook has and could potentially cater to with this. That's not something to, like, you know, thumb your nose at. But I think there's a couple other, like, little threads and stuff that I collected, and there's definitely some things to consider. Like, I think this is going to be a huge benefit, if successful, that this could be a huge wealth transfer. But I think it would be in, like, in the benefit of this consortium of companies, and, you know, these $10 million node operators. That's one thing. I don't think I said this, but I discovered, I heard about this not too long ago, and I thought it was a joke when I first heard about it. But you have to pay, like, all the node operators are permissioned, and you have to pay $10 million to become a node operator, which I literally thought it was a joke. I was laughing about it, and we were joking back and forth, and somebody reiterated that point with some degree of seriousness, and I was like, wait a second, wait a second. Are you being serious? Is this legit? And it's like, no, yeah, check it out. That just cracks me up to no end. Like, they're trying to create, it even says in the paper, where's the actual quote? Let me see if I can find it, that it's going to be permissioned at first, but it's just, this is so stupid, that they've published reports outlining the roadmap for the shift toward a permissionless system. I'm sorry, but if your thing starts totally centralized and it's based on signing of stakeholders, and you think you're going to figure out, proof of stake or whatever it is later on, it's not going to work. I just, there is no, ooh, we're going to start out centralized, but then don't worry, we're going to become decentralized. There's no incentive for them to do this. There is plenty of incentive for them to position themselves as that right now. That don't worry, this is going to be independent. Don't worry, this is going to be permissionless and distributed one day. But right now, because we don't know really how to do that, it's going to be centralized, permissioned. You're going to pay us a lot of money to be a part of it. And it's going to be this consortium of people that we want specifically involved, and we will hold all the data. But don't worry, we'll give up that massive level of control, and we'll give up that massive advantage a little bit later on down the road. It's in the works. That's not going to happen. Or at least I don't see any reason why I would have to feel like a complete idiot to trust that that was ever going to happen, or that whatever is holding them back from creating that now, that suddenly that's going to be possible in the future. Whatever's getting in the way right now is going to always be in the way, and then the tendency, the way they have built it, and whatever benefits they get from it in the state of the centralized permissioned version is only going to increase the barriers to making anything distributed or permissionless in the future. So I think that ship has sailed the second they start it, and the ship is getting further and further away every day that it doesn't happen. So if they're planning on doing this in the future, it's a really roundabout way to sell themselves as distributed permissionless without ever having to do it and not planning on actually doing it. They'll throw some money at R&D to see if they can figure it out, and then just, in 8 years to be like, well, it worked great, and we don't really need permissionlessness. It was just, we hoped, and blah, blah, blah. But one thing that, aside from the fact that this competes with retail banking, and that this does compete with central banks because it's kind of a, they have quote unquote backed by bank deposits and treasuries from high quality central banks. It seems like a little bit of an oxymoron, but I'll let it slide. But think about central banks and their monetary networks as just that, networks. And when just like the internet, when somebody makes like a website for the internet, they're adding value to the internet. And like when you're an incumbent in a system, typically new innovations in fintech and like some new service or some new payment system like a Square Cash app or Venmo or PayPal, anything like that, central bank has no, they're not, it's not of any importance to them. Like, in fact, all of those things are just boosts to them. Those are huge benefits to them because they're spreading out the network and they're making it more accessible. Like anything that like that, like PayPal or whatever, that uses the dollar just makes the dollar stronger. There's no competition with the dollar. Libra is different. Libra does compete with central banks because they technically have a position of trying to decide which treasuries to hold, which puts the network that Facebook has and the users of Libra in that system. It puts them in a position to be able to choose whatever national or central banking currency or treasury that essentially gives them the most benefit. It puts a competitive environment in what is usually just a jurisdictional environment in which they don't have to worry about competition. So if I'm using Libra on Facebook, suddenly the U.S. central bank, if they're trying to like instill or input enforce negative interest rates, or if they're devaluing their currency against some other country because they're racing to have as many ex or imports or whatever it is as possible, blah blah blah. If they're doing that, suddenly they're in check. They're put in check. They're having to compete with Facebook because Facebook might decide that anybody who's holding Libra shouldn't be holding,
a Federal Reserve note, or the U.S. Government treasuries, or something like that. As soon as that sort of thing is brought into question, you realize Libra is competing against central banks, even though they say that they're not. They are, because it's its own currency, it's its own fluctuating value, and it's based on the decisions of what Facebook or this consortium, whatever, whoever it is that's the central backers of all of this and the assets involved, what do they hold that supposedly keeps Libra its value? And they have an interest to protect Libra against the political interest involved, even though they will very likely bend to the political interest because, the political interest will just threaten them, and if it's centralized, they're going to do what they're told. So, but the big thing is that this really screws over a lot of other cryptocurrencies. A lot of these centralized cryptocurrencies, the one in particular that comes to mind is Ripple, is that this is what Ripple wanted to do without any of the networking, without any of the banks like participating. Like everything that Ripple has not been able to pull off, Facebook basically has by default. This could kill Ripple. It is not going to do anything to Bitcoin, but it could literally kill Ripple because this is everything Ripple is trying to do. They wanted payments between banks, and they wanted banks to use this for or use Ripple for payments and like movement between banks, and so that it was a global network that could be used for remittances and all this stuff. And they're having to start from square one. They're having to find and reach out to all of these banks to get them to use it. And the currency itself isn't quote unquote backed by anything. And if we're talking about money as an honest ledger, there's nothing about Ripple that makes it an honest ledger because it's not. It's a centrally controlled ledger, which means it's as honest as the people who are controlling it. And so when you suddenly have a competition between a centrally controlled, dishonest, or just a permissioned ledger, that's got a giant network that's already spans many different jurisdictions, already has reason for other banking institutions to try to, or to have some sort of a partnership in this. And just all have 2 billion people on this network, guys. When you have something like that that's already in place and then is backed by assets to essentially peg it to some sort of a value rather than just floating based on the quote unquote honesty of the Ripple ledger, when that's the competition, when you're looking at one that has a massive network, already has interests involved, has a profit potential for the corporations involved by having interest-bearing assets and holding capital of other people and earning interest on it while the customer does not know that they're getting screwed out of their interest payment, essentially, which is what it looks like is going to happen at the moment. Maybe Caitlin is right and they will be forced to offer interest. That would be really cool to see that happen. But when that is now competing with Ripple, which is backed by nothing, so it is literally just, do we believe it is honest? Which I think is a hilarious notion to even suggest that Ripple would be honest, or that the fact that, the Ripple people, like the issuers, own, like, I can't remember exactly, but it's some stupid, stupid majority of all the coins that exist, that they don't have any of the network or the recognition. They have no built-in customers. They have no built-in banking relationships. There's still not any banks using Ripple to like settle or send transactions with anything. The token is completely unattached to any of it. It's not a security, it's not anything. So when those two things are set against each other, Libra looks like a gold mine. Now, when you compare it to Bitcoin, it looks like garbage, and it is garbage. But there's plenty of centralized garbage out there. Like, it works just fine in a sense. If you're not concerned about privacy, Facebook is a great social network. If you're not worried about independence or censorship, YouTube is a great video platform. But you're going to get deplatformed if you say the wrong thing. If you say something that's politically incorrect, you're going to get your transaction reversed if you're paying for the wrong thing or dealing with the wrong business if you're using PayPal. But that doesn't mean that those things aren't explosive businesses that actually open up a lot of services and things to a lot of people. And this is the first one in fintech that, outside of strictly crypto, outside of Bitcoin, it's an innovation and attempt at making a new money in fintech. And that's what cryptocurrency has brought to the stage, is that people are asking what money is, and people are asking why things have value. And I just think this is good. This is another step in the whole game changing so fast, and I think it's going to keep happening faster. I think the fact that Facebook is doing this right now is going to immediately bring it into like just screaming in front of everyone that like other people have to find a way to participate. Other people have to put their skin in the game on this whole movement that's happening. People are going to have to hedge their bets. Somebody's going to think about the companies that are going to respond to this by realizing they can't compete with Facebook's network effect. They can't compete with that that customer base. So they have to compete on the value and the security of the money they use. So my question in this whole thing is, what large company or social network, Twitter maybe, attaches their ship to Bitcoin because Facebook is doing Libra, so that they can set themselves apart? As you know, Facebook is saying this won't be a money a honeypot for governments and data sharing. Facebook is saying that this is going to one day be permissionless, and saying that this is going to be good for remittances and it's going to go across borders and jurisdictions. But we have one that already does. We're building on top of Bitcoin. So I think the group that has the largest opportunities here are the people who attach to Bitcoin, are the people who position themselves as, we're using Bitcoin because we aren't just talk, where Libra is just being flowery with their language and saying they're going to do all this great stuff that they can't do. We can do it, and we're going to build it on top of Bitcoin. We're going to be actually independent. We're going to be actually cross-border and jurisdictionless. And we're going to be about actual permissionless and decentralization. So for everybody who has talked about whether or not this is good or bad, like just the whole development of Libra is good or bad for Bitcoin, I think this is the best news for Bitcoin in a long time, because it's just another big piece of proof, or just showing the direction that this is all moving, that there is a huge inevitable shift happening here. And Bitcoin is forcing the hand of these companies and these institutions to be involved, so that they're not the last ones to, the island here. So now let's hit a couple of things real quick about how it's actually going to work. It looks like that this is just a state database where this stuff is not stored in blocks here. It's not a blockchain. They literally open the paper talking about the blockchain. It's called the Libra blockchain. The abstract is the Libra blockchain, oh my God, is a decentralized programmable database designed to support a low volatility cryptocurrency that have the ability to serve as an efficient medium of exchange for billions of people around the world. We present a proposal for the Libra protocol, implements the Libra blockchain. Good Lord. I can't talk today. But blah, blah, blah. You get the idea. They clearly keep calling this thing a blockchain, but they don't store anything in blocks, and there does not seem to be anything. It seems like, and I agree with Jameson from what he's pulled out of this paper as well, that it looks like this is a state database that is just updated at regular intervals, and there is not a chain of blocks like going back through its entire history. So in that sense, when when people like join the network, like validators, not like normal users that are just going to be querying from the validators, is that they don't have to play through the full history of the blockchain As long as they just trust the existing validators, they can just kind of download the current state and they're synced with the network, because there's not, they don't have to make sure that there is, because there's not a blockchain, they're not going through and making sure that every block in the entire set was the exact recorded history of all transactions that happened. Now, they do say in it that it's going to be pseudonymous in the sense that your key pairs do generate your account. So you can create, just like Bitcoin or any, well, most of the cryptocurrencies, you can just keep generating accounts as many as you want. But Calibre? Calibre probably. Is going to be their wallet, and it is going to be KYC AML. So there's a big question of where they just let people make wallets as they see fit to this system, because obviously they're going to have to do KYC AML on their wallet, and their ability to do anything that a government would frown upon is immediately brought into question with their system. I don't think they are going to have, even if they want to, I don't think they're going to get that, the benefit that they think they're going to get out of that. So, and there is gas of some sort. There's some sort of transaction fee or something to prevent the DOS. And this, they use the word resources, and they talk quite a bit about the idea that there's going to be smart, there's a lot of suggestions that this is going to be smart contract enabling. And because they use like generic resources means that it's not all going to be Libra, that it's not all going to be their currency that they think is going to be transacted on this thing. And with they use a programming language, a new one to this system called Move. And it's going to introduce a really interesting question as to whether or not, how do they control who can make smart contracts and who can't? Like, how do they prevent something like the DAO from happening, the DAO? Because that was a poorly designed smart contract that got executed. And you know, like, that immediately makes this system look terrible if they end up in a situation like this. So they need to be treating this very conservatively. So it's a huge question as to what degree of what broadness are they going to have in the smart contracting language, and how are they going to protect developers from, you know, making horrible mistakes in this way, and, you know, moving things into a system that just has huge bugs that, if anything goes right for them trying to make this permissionless or decentralized in any way whatsoever, it immediately becomes incredibly difficult to upgrade or account for mistakes. So any bad programming or poor process, like decisions and like how this thing, if this isn't like set very well from the beginning, the only way to allow it to change quickly, particularly in the face of like adversaries, when we're talking about smart contract functionality and how users can make and issue smart contracts, these open to huge like vulnerabilities and problems that could come up down the road, even years after some sort of contract or asset has been created in this system, if they don't get it right the first time, the ability to change it or fix it later becomes incredibly difficult. It could have huge consequences if they start doing things wrong or they take the move fast and break things approach, which, you know, who knows? We'll see how that all comes in the future. But, you know, I don't want to get too much into the actual inner workings of it. I will say that it sounds very much proof of stake. Smart contract, they want to issue multiple assets. It is a private public key pair system where you can just create an account synonymously, just like Bitcoin and Ethereum, even though their wallet that will be built into, I don't know, I guess I'm sure Facebook, all Facebook accounts will have the wallet or something. that will be fully KYC AML. And so this will be an ongoing development, and I kind of want to dig into the specifics and see if I can't get permission from Jameson Lopp to read his thoughts on Libra, quote, blockchain. He published on Medium. I will link to it in the show notes so you guys can read it if you want to get ahead of me. But I think I am going to read that. And on that note, we are going to be reading, because yesterday was the deadline compelling Craig Wright to reveal, I think, his addresses and like the fact that he owns or did own some addresses or keys or something in the past. There should be something to announce on that front. And I am going to be reading Lopps. I got permission from Jameson and Bitcoin Magazine. A thank you to everyone I talked to in that, Christian, CK Snarks. I think it was Jeremy from Bitcoin Magazine. Everybody was super nice and kept bouncing me from one person to the next until I finally talked to everybody I needed to talk to. But it sounds like everything's good to go, and I'm free to read that one on the show. So we are going to have Lopps, How Many Wrongs Make a Right, probably this week, depending on what I've got coming up in the next couple of days, because I've got the Q&A tomorrow. Don't forget that. If you've got any questions you want to drop for my first Ask Guy episode, that is happening tomorrow morning. I'm going to start recording at 9 o'clock, so try to get your questions in. I do have a couple of them, and I might just have to fill in gaps or pull from some previous questions in the past that I've had people ask me. But I would love to have questions from you guys. So if you get this, listen to this episode and catch it fast enough, leave me a voice message on anchor.fm/thecryptoeconomy. Obviously, if you're listening to this and you went through the Anchor or the Twitter link, you can get it right there. But leave me a voice message, leave me a question, shoot me a question on Twitter at thecryptoeconomy. I'm thecryptoeconomy everywhere. So send me a message on one of those platforms. I will get it into tomorrow's episode if I manage to get it ahead of time. Otherwise, you'll have to wait until Ask Guy comes back around, probably in a month. I think I'm going to try to do this monthly. We'll see what happens. We'll see how much fun I have tomorrow. And until then, don't forget to follow me. Don't forget to check out Caitlin Long for that Twitter thread. I'm going to retweet that, so you'll be able to find that in my Twitter post, because that was just a great thread. Don't forget to follow Jameson Lopp and check out everything that is going on with all this stuff with Libra. Check out developers.libra.org. I will have all these notes in the show notes, or all these links in the show notes. And until next time, I guess that will close this episode out. Thank you guys for listening. This is my take on Guy's take. That's me, Guy. Guy's take on Libra and the Facebook facepalm coin, which, arguably enough, like, as much as, like, I give it crap in the sense of, like, being, you know, crypto crap, which it is, because they don't understand, I don't think they understand what money is, and I don't think this is positioned well to do the supposed goals that they have to make this work, or to make this beneficial in the way that they want it to be, you know, for the third world, for remittances, and for permissionlessness. I just don't see that happening. But no doubt, this is going to be a fascinating, fascinating thing to follow and stay up on, and very curious how this is going to affect Bitcoin going forward, because I think this will be a huge benefit. So let me know what you think. Drop me a line on Twitter at TheCryptoEconomy. I'm Guy Swan. And until next time, this has been the Crypto Economy Podcast. Take it easy, guys. We'll be right back.